It seems to me that the natural world is the greatest source of excitement, the greatest source of visual beauty, the greatest source of intellectual interest. It is the greatest source of so much in life that makes life worth living. Not my quote, it is that of David Attenborough. Hi there. This podcast will be different from all others. It will be a chronicle of experience I had in my community celebrating Earth Week and Earth Day, which is April 22nd, and some reflections on it over the years. But first, let me welcome you to the Audible Weed Walk, episode number 38. This is Nina. Hope you are all doing well, taking precautions and boosting your immunity as we brace ourselves against a virus that surely one day will be tamed. Pandemic or not, much of our disbalance in nature comes from our own disconnect with it. So Earth Day is a very special day for me because it is a clear reminder or a celebration of our need to connect with nature. So let's break all norms of my podcast with this one, and I will share with you the Earth Day I have celebrated now and before, and take home messages from the Earth Day celebration this year that has stayed with me. A few weedy wild plant tips at the end. So it's very special, actually. The podcast and the radio and the Earth Day goes together for me since I have came to Oroville so many years back. Actually, if you search Oroville radio site, the earliest presence comes in a form of an interview by the radio in celebration of Earth Day, which was a gala celebration over a period of 7 days at that time. It is actually during the Earth Day in one of these years that had started screening ecological films, which we now call EcoFilm Fest, and it continues for a week. It was the first everyday screening that we did also. So there was a first of everything for me that was associated with Earth Day. So it remains to be a very special day for me. So I wanted to do something, plan something special, despite whatever is happening around. So this is what I did. I had sent out an invitation to a few friends who hasn't been, they are interested, but they haven't been able to come to the weed walk during the season that I was doing, you know, for 2 months every Saturday. So I sent them the invitation, then decided that my first thing in the morning will be with the weeds. What a wonderful way to start. And there we go. This particular weed walk was a little different because all I wanted was actually people who had been perhaps introduced to the weeds for them to reconnect, to get their connection a little deeper. And we had people from all ages and groups, and they were excited. They were collecting. Even at this late in the season, we could find ground cherries to munch on. We had mantakali fruits to pop in our mouth as we actually walked around. And usually the weed walk is about only an hour, but this one we actually finished it by, you know, 1.5 hours. Then we were chit-chatting in the parking lot, and it took till about 7:30 to 10. And yet, even though it took for so long, it was such a rejuvenating experience. But in the evenings, for all days, starting from the 16th, we had the ecological films, starting with The Secret Lives of Frogs by Ajay and Vijay Beri. Absolutely highly recommend you this film. If you get a chance, I do not know which portal it has been streamed, and I'm sure that it is, you must catch this film. And the next one, the last one, which was yesterday on the 22nd of April, was Kiss the Ground by Joshua and Rebecca Tickle. And we thank both the filmmakers for sharing these awesome films with us. What remained with me, The Secret Lives of Frogs, it's so much, it allows you in this 55 minutes, which must have taken them more than 3 years and many, many hours of footage to make this very special film. We get to see the lives of this frog called Purple Frog. It's endemic to the Western Ghats of this area. They look like miniature sumo wrestlers. And this is the first time science had recorded their whole life cycle, you know, their whole breeding process, finding a mate, journey. You feel that, you know, you're in some kind of a secret mission together without, of course, getting your feet dirty. And what the filmmakers perhaps, you know, made it look so easy, because a lot of people after the film wanted to actually go, because, you know, we are in India, wanted to go to the Western Ghats and see these frogs by themselves. What perhaps in these films doesn't get highlighted enough is that it's a not easy terrain. The number of mosquito bites and other scratches and cuts that you would get along the way, it is not something that everybody can do and everybody shouldn't do, because if it becomes a ecotourism spot for this sumo, for this purple frogs, I'm calling them sumo frogs itself, it will not be it will actually cause a lot of damage for the species we want to watch and would like them to survive. One of the things that the filmmakers very briefly mentioned, that in the film they highlighted that a tribal community at some point collects tadpoles of this particular frog, and many, I'm not very sure of this particular frog or another species, but they collect about 300 tadpoles. They cook for a family of 3 or 4. So imagine if more people, you know, eat, you know, get a taste of those tadpoles, there's not much hope for that species to survive. Already there is so much pressure from degradation and habitat loss. So the filmmaker made a comment that, you know, perhaps they can be these tribal people, they can be won over eventually, but even right now, whatever they take, because it is a small number of people, and even though the 300 sounds a large number, in terms of the greater population, it's not much. So the species actually can continue. When it cannot continue is when it becomes commercial, which means if it becomes kind of a wild food that is served in the homestays and the restaurants in the cities as an exotic food. So that is what we as consumers who are not in the not indigenous, not living in an indigenous community, not in the wilderness ourselves, need to have a check and balance for ourselves. And I noted that. The other film that actually, other thing that actually really influenced me during the Earth Day this week is, it was a part of a movie which we had screened, and in this part they were talking about grid-connected solar. Now, living in a community and living myself for more than 10 years completely off-grid, it is not anything new to me. Grid connected, you know, to be entirely off grid. There have been a lot of debate about grid connected solar, because it is not that popular in developing countries, because the grid itself is not that reliable. And it doesn't, one of the advantages of grid connected solar is that you can have a battery, you can get rid of your battery bank, which is actually the most polluting part of this whole process. But in this particular grid connection, you did not need the grid to be reliable, because what it actually created is a local grid. So each house, this example was in Bangladesh, each house, if they have a tiny little solar panel, they could get a meter and they could get connected to the next house, which also has a panel and a meter. So if you have, you create a neighborhood grid and you decide whether you want to share your power or not. But if you share your power, you actually get paid for it. So you're actually selling within the community. So it's local currency, local energy currency that the community itself is generating. How exciting is that? So if somebody within that community cannot afford a solar panel, they can still get the meter, put some money in that meter, and get a shared power from their neighbors, and eventually probably get a solar panel and generate their own power. So it gives the freedom to individuals to engage in a grid in the amount that they can afford to, and because the energy is remaining within the community first before it can then get connected to another grid in the local area, in the neighborhood, and that neighborhood can get connected to a bigger grid. So actually, the grid is developed bottom-up, which is not what the grid-connected solar we have heard about for so long, and not usual. No, this is not, you know, the typical of what is heard about. So one thing is to read about it, another thing to watch it. So I highly recommend this movie. It's called 2040, and it is given as one of the option. One clear message that's coming in this Earth Day is, yes, we are inching towards a doom. We are not listening. Somehow we feel that we are, as a human species, quite invincible. Nothing will happen to us. But you know, when we look at this purple frog, when we look at this amazing nature films, you would realize that we had never had the opportunity to know so much about nature like we do now. So we definitely are more knowledgeable about how to treat nature or what is important in the lives of, say, octopus. So this gives us not only a responsibility, but also some sense of connection to them. So it allows us to actually do something about it. So while we are actually inching towards our doom, we are actually greater, more equipped, both technologically and information-wise, to address the doom. So that is the hope, because as more and more it has become evident that we need to address climate change, address biodiversity loss, address loss of soil fertility with more nature-based system, not because of nature itself, because nature itself will survive no matter what. Is the survival of the humans, which are not for sure. So for humans to actually continue to be sustainable, we need to do something about it. And being the smartest species that we think ourselves to be, is the time that we need to react. So the last film which we had seen, Kiss the Ground, was by Joshua and Rebecca Tickle, was exactly that. It highlighted how soil itself, if we can regenerate the soil, which we have degraded so huge part of our planet that there is a lot of regeneration work to be done. So if we manage to regenerate the soil, not create forest, not create anything that is impossible, but just to allow the soil to act as a soil, have the soil microbes operate, let the, you know, natural vegetation, weedy wild vegetation, yes, it's coming, right, to come and do its work, then we already can address climate change in a huge way that we haven't thought about it before. So with that, what is actually amazing that despite all the things that is happening around the world, if you really concentrate, take this week and concentrate it on what is happening around the world in terms of conservation, biodiversity, and regeneration, one feels hopeful. I feel hopeful. And I hope, and I invite you to engage in activities that connect you to nature, because that's where the key is. Whatever your source of connection is, whatever your mode of connection is, if it's a film, let it be. If it's a weed walk, excellent. If it's eating something from your yard, that is even better. But take the first step, be connected. And there is the celebration of Earth Day every day. I will finish this podcast with a few information about what we have been told that we must boost our body with. You know, for the COVID-19 that is going around, we are told that our body needs more zinc and vitamin C. Almost all of us know what a vitamin C does. It's a really healing, it heals the body, it kind of rejuvenates the body. But I looked upon what zinc actually does. Zinc is an essential mineral for the immune system. It protects the body from developing cold, pneumonia, or infection. It is an anti-inflammatory, and combined with antioxidants like beta-carotene, vitamin C, and other vitamins, it also decreases vision loss and many other loss of bodily functions. So where do you get zinc? You get zinc in many nuts and seeds. Pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, legumes, tofu, mushrooms, garlic. We have plenty around us. So if you want to be a weeder, there's an option also. There is a plant which a lot of you have actually asked me. This plant looks very similar to fenugreek or methi. But it is not fenugreek or methi because it doesn't smell the same. So many people gets a little, buys it thinking it's a fenugreek, but it turns out to be not. But it's equally edible and wonderful plant. This plant, which is actually Senna tora or Senna opticifolia, it's called Chakramardak in Sanskrit. There's a lot of Indians name, Chakunda, Chakod, Chakramarda, Senavu in Tamil, and in Goa, I think it's called Talkula. These leaves are absolutely edible. You can, make it a little bit of green curry or put it in a pot herb. Pot herb is a kind of a word where you can, imagine a pot with a broth and you dump in a few wonderful, weedy, wild greens with great nutrients. And so it's an excellent pot herb. And the seeds of this plant can be roasted as a coffee substitute. So wonderful. You can have, if you don't want like the zinc tablets, these are there for you growing around you. And yes, it grows all over India, all over Europe, pretty much all over the world. So vitamin C, you are very familiar with where to get, the citrus food. And so I'm not going into all that. The vitamin C that you can get in the weedy wild green is Potulaca or purslane. It's called Lunia or I think it's called Parpukire in Tamil. And this is grows wild. People grow in there as a cultivar. And this is also a great, garden variety. So you can actually have a beautiful garden, have wonderful flowers, and eat part of it as part of your vitamin C. So there you go. One of the statements that David Attenborough made in a film, which says that we moved from being part of nature to being apart from nature. So this podcast, I invite you that let's not be apart, but be a part of nature again. Take care. See you next time. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Auroville Radio.